This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world. Today on Dreamland, we have two of our favorite guests back, Trish and Rob McGregor. They always provide us with such extremely good and fascinating information, and today's show is no exception because they've got a new book out called Phenomena. Their website, by the way, is syncrasecrets.com. Phenomena is available on Amazon and pretty much wherever ebooks are sold. Phenomena, Harnessing Your Psychic Powers. Trish and Rob, welcome back to Dreamland.
Thank you for having us, Whitley.
Thank you.
It's always fun to be here.
Well, it is fun to be together, and we've had a lot of fun together. We went to Casadega, the psychic town in Florida together some time ago. Couple of years ago, after I had a psychic hit directing me to go there. And so I'd just gotten an airplane and went, and you guys and Peter Lavenda joined us, and we had a wonderful time. And we'll talk about that.
We need to do that again.
Yeah, we should do it again. I hope we can get a hold of Peter. I believe you guys were driving back from Casadega when I called you about going to Casadega, speaking of synchronicities. Is that right?
Yes, we were.
Yeah,
we went to Casadega, and later in the show we will talk about that incident, and it was a very interesting one in many respects, especially for me. I have a lot of trouble believing in mediumship, but after that experience, not so much. Okay, Phenomena, Harnessing Your Psychic Powers. The issue here is, as you point out at the beginning, when you talk about telepathy, we don't do as much as we can with what we have, in part because we don't believe we have it.
That's a big part of it, I think. And also, there seems to be so much technology now that maybe we were in a primitive human state that it was more natural for us, and now it doesn't seem that way so much as because of the technology that we have, that we can instantly make contact. That could be a factor, but I've also heard the opposite, with people saying that because of the technology, we're more in contact psychically. So it could can view that either way.
You know, it's an interesting sort of conundrum. But one of the things you point out in the book is the tremendous change between 2005 and 2017 in how many people in America, at least, believe in the paranormal. I was astonished by that.
Yeah, we were astonished also. I mean, Rob and I met in 1981 when very few people even talked about psychic things in public, especially not like at a cocktail party or something. And then in 2017, Chapman University in California conducted a survey of American fears, okay, and it included a battery of items on paranormal beliefs that range from belief in Bigfoot to psychic powers, haunted houses, Atlantis, visits by aliens, that kind of thing. And I think the results really show dramatically how beliefs about the paranormal have changed. 5% now believe that advanced civilizations like Atlantis existed. 52% believe places can be haunted by spirits. More than a third believe aliens visited Earth in the ancient past. More than a quarter believe aliens have visited the planet in modern times. And a quarter believe that objects can be moved with the mind. Okay, so this study concluded that 75% of Americans believe in some facet of the paranormal.
Well, that's absolutely fascinating, because there was a very different outcome in 2005.
Yeah, there was. That study was conducted by Baylor University, which concluded that only 15% of Americans believed in the paranormal. So what accounts for the increase? You know, that's really the big question.
It is a big question, and free Dreamlanders, just wait for it. We're going to get back and answer that question in just a few minutes. As I'm sure you all know, A New World is now for sale on unknowncountry.com. You can get it in paperback as an ebook or on audible.com as an audiobook. It's really especially written for people who
come to this website, especially for our subscribers, because I think you're the core of change. I think that if the visitors are going to emerge in the future, and if I believe it is possible that they will, then you're going to be the people who are most able to handle that. The book offers perspective, it offers ideas, and it offers, above all, empowerment in the face of what is going to be a really extraordinary experience. A new world, if you can take it, means exactly that. We got to work to get this, and we've got to bear it when we do. It's a new world and a very different one from this, because in this new world, there is no barrier between the living and the dead, not like it is now at all. And of course, that's very freeing, but it's also tremendously challenging in ways we've hardly even thought about yet. So get a new world and get on the program. Go to Amazon to get it. Go to Audible to get it. Your local bookstore may have it. If they don't, ask them to order it from Baker & Taylor. That's Baker & Taylor. That's the site that they order books from. We're talking to Trish and Rob McGregor. Their book, Phenomena, Harnessing Your Psychic Powers, available as an ebook. And their website is synchrosecrets.com, where you can keep up with all of their prolific work. They are adventurous researchers, is what I would describe them as. And you guys had an experience actually with Anne that, as I recall, is in Afterlife Revolution. Right after
yes,
she passed,
is.
she had trouble getting your attention. I call it.
What happened is I think she died, was it August 11th?
No, August 15th.
Okay, 15th. Well, it was the next day when I heard about it. And I was writing you an email telling you how sorry I was to hear it. And I started a sentence, please no. And then suddenly there was this tremendous explosion in the family room, and our offices are just off the family room. And Rob and I both leaped up. Our dog jumped off the couch. I mean, we thought there had been maybe the TV blew up, or it sounded like a transformer.
Exploding, but right in our family room, which is adjacent to our two offices. And so it was quite startling, but nothing had changed at all. We couldn't find any source of that explosion right in our house.
But except Anne had quite a temper when she was ignored.
Well, she made herself known, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's get back to this new book, because you call it phenomena, and that's an interesting word. Why choose that particular word?
I just think it's an intriguing word.
We were playing with a couple other titles, but we just kept coming back to phenomena. There's a movie that was pretty interesting.
Also, there have been other books by that name. But,
yeah.
But at first, you know, we were going to call it Visions, but that didn't really encompass everything.
Right. Visions seem to be like the first chapter.
Yeah, right.
of the book. It didn't really encompass everything we wanted to write about.
Well,
in fact,
second
chapter, Whitley, Hearing Things, that experience with Anne would actually fall under there.
Yeah, exactly. And it would indeed. And the first chapter, though, is Seeing Things, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that, because you've had your own experiences with seeing things. And also, there are, you know, visions. What we're trying to do in this show is essentially what we always do in Dreamland, and what this whole website is about. It's about breaking down barriers of resistance inside mm-hmm. ourselves that largely we don't even know are there. And we do that with story, which is the single most powerful mode of transmission of energy in the human species.
Mm-hmm.
Story is above everything. And so let's talk
about...
So
that's so true, too.
Especially in our books. Our books are heavy on anecdotes and stories where we include research, of course, but some books on... parapsychology, the paranormal, are heavy on research and have very few stories, especially from the authors. And so we include a lot of our stories. Because
I mean, we hear stuff. You know, I mean, people, I don't mean psychically, but I mean, you know, people come up to us, for instance, at the dog park, who know about the kind of things we write about, and we hear stories from them. Some of them are pretty incredible. You know, so anyway, we include stories.
Well, tell us the Deepwater Horizon story.
Okay, this is in 2010, and Rob was teaching a meditation course at the local gym. And he directed us to a point in the future where we could hear or see a headline. Okay, it could be in a newspaper, television, radio, the internet, whatever it was. And then he instructed us to see it vividly with captions and photos. Okay, this is when the Deepwater Horizon oil spill was in its third month. It had started on April 20th of 2010 in the Gulf when a BP oil rig exploded just 50 miles off the Louisiana coast. Okay, at the time, it was considered to be the worst oil spill in history, with more than 200 million gallons of crude oil pumped into the Gulf for a total of 87 days before it was capped. So this was it was one of those things that everybody was focused on. So that might have been why it was easy to see something. So Rob has a great voice for this kind of thing. It's real soothing, and if you're a little bit tired, you kind of drift to the border of sleep. And I saw the new containment cap working. The gusher of oil had either slowed or it had stopped. But I figured it was wishful thinking, and I just promptly zoned out. But anyway, when Rob brought us out of the meditation, he went around the room asking everyone what they'd seen. And another woman had seen the same thing I had, that the containment cap was going to work. And then, Rob, you saw something, too.
Yeah, I saw rectangular shapes that were yellow against a kind of a purple background, scenes that later appeared right on the news related to the...
And not long after that, this is July 10th, I think, that we saw this meditation. And on September 19th, the well was officially declared to be dead.
Yeah, and so it was a prophetic vision in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think so.
Very definitely. And this gets me to, and, you know, we're going to circle probably back to this a little later, but it gets me to the whole issue of meditation. I know that later in the book, you talk about different means of empowerment. But let's just briefly talk about the importance and usefulness of meditation now. Tell us, Rob, if you will, a little bit about your understanding of meditation and what it is and what it does.
Well, I think of meditation as a practice that allows us to connect to a deeper part of ourselves, our true selves. And through that connection, we can have more control over our lives, our emotions. We can be more relaxed and focused. We can heal ourselves. It's about journeys to inner worlds, self-discovery. It's, it's all of these things. And it's, but what happens when I teach these workshops is people come in and they're saying, I've tried meditation, and my mind just runs 1,000 miles an hour. I can't stop thinking. So this is the first thing I work with people is methods to slow your thoughts. And I say, don't worry about it. Let's just start out. Let your mind wander and see what happens. And I do that for about 5 minutes or so, and allowing them to just sit quietly. And then I say, okay, now, what was your last thought? And what was the thought before that? How did you get there? What was the thought before that? Try to retrace your thoughts. In fact, when I taught one recently, I had been driving to the workshop, and I was thinking about two of yoga teachers at the studio where I was going to teach that were no longer there. And I thought, now why am I thinking about them? I immediately became mindful of my thoughts, and I was able to trace those thoughts all the way back to the driveway when I left the left the house. And you know, I could see the progression. So that's what I was trying to get them to become mindful of their thoughts. And that's really the first step, is become aware of your thinking. And so that's an important factor. Then gradually you can go deeper and find space between your thoughts and sink deeper.
And also, I think you completely bypass the rational left brain, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, in my life, meditation is the center of my whole relationship with what I call the visitors, which has become a bigger and bigger word over the years. It now encompasses what we think of as the dead and alien non-human presences that are capable of becoming physical if they wish, which is a very interesting experience to have.
That's eerie.
Well, yeah. Well, they are all like that. They're not – the visitors aren't stuck in the physical like we are.
Right.
They project into it from the outside when they wish to. This is why the military has so much trouble with them. You know, they're shooting these cats all the time, shooting at them. But they're not proceeding in a very rational way. But you know, they don't know that, so it goes.
Don't tell them.
No. Well, I'd like to tell them, but it goes on like this. Anyway, now getting on though, and if we meditation is something that opens a door, but I want to go back and after the break, we're going to have a couple minute break here for our free Dreamlanders and talk about some of the stories, like the Renee Wiley story.
Oh, yeah,
it's a corker. Yeah, we're going to get to it in just a moment, folks. Trish and Rob's website is blog.synchrosecrets.com. I said it wrong the first time earlier, so get it right, blog.synchrosecrets.com. Their new book is Phenomena, Harnessing Your Psychic Powers. We'll be right back.
In the years before his first remembered close encounter, Whitley Strieber wrote many books and stories that reflected his unconscious awareness of what was happening to him. Now, for UnknownCountry.com subscribers, he has begun a program of reading some of these very special stories.
The latest story is The Open Doors. It's the only one in this series that was actually written after the close encounter experience, but I believe it's important because it contains what could be the reason for the total government secrecy and lockdown on this information. I learned from General Arthur Exon, who had been commandant of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, a great deal about the Roswell incident, upon which I based my book Majestic, including some hints about a possible, very unusual reason in physics that the secrecy may be being kept by the government at all costs. This inspired The Open Doors, a story about the last days of Dr. John von Neumann, the physicist who may have come up with this theory. So find out this dark, esoteric secret and the fears of the man who conceived of it as he died. This is the beginning of The Open Doors. The meteor cut a trench of light, was followed by silent howling, left a sense of strange life. The chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission turned away as if slapped. On this last night of the Perseids, it had to be his foul luck to see one of the plagued things. Still angry at himself for compulsively searching the skies, he dragged in a breath of the flushed suburban air, stopping suddenly when he felt the slight pulling beneath his chest that was the pulling he knew of death. Princeton's lights shone intermittently along the hills, beads of memory that recalled the strong, foolish days when he had taught there. He took another breath, grabbing for it in a way that struck him as rather horrible. "How you cling, von Neumann," he said to the air. "Von Neumann," he said again, pronouncing it like an American. "How can you be so von?" He glanced up as a virgin might to meet the eyes of her betrothed and face the unknown that sought entry into the world.
Know how you can hear more? Get the Dreamland Archive back to 2004, hundreds of special interviews, a lively community, Whitley's meditations, and so much more? Subscribe to UnknownCountry.com today. Go to UnknownCountry.com and click on the Subscribe tab. Our subscription offering is well worth the small cost. Hours of information and entertainment for as little as 10 cents a day. Join us now.
We're talking to Trish and Rob McGregor, Phenomena, Harnessing Your Psychic Powers, and Free Dreamlanders. Before we left to listen to those terrific commercials that you probably won't do one single thing about, God help us, we were going to talk about Renee Wiley. And we're gonna basically tell stories during this show, because it's a story is empowerment. Never forget that. It's also disempowerment, by the way, and we'll talk about that too, and about fear. But first, let's talk about Renee Wiley.
Well, we met her at a time when we were living in Fort Lauderdale, and I can't remember exactly. I think I had a psychic reading with one of the Fort Lauderdale psychics who said, "Oh, you need to go see Renee Wiley. She's an astrologer, an artist. She's fascinating." So we connected. And one night, we knew that Renee worked with the Cooper City Police. But in August, I think it was, before we had met her, of 1981, she and one of these cops from Cooper City were driving near a mall in Hollywood, Florida, where Adam Walsh had been last seen.
And remind us who Adam Walsh was.
Adam Walsh was John Walsh's son.
A five-year-old boy who had just disappeared
six.
From a six-year-old boy, yeah,
yeah.
From a mall in
right.
South Florida.
Okay.
And his face was all over South Florida. I mean, they just had posters everywhere. And this cop was hoping that Renee, because she was empathic, might be able to pick up something about him, because nobody knew what had happened to him. And the police believed he had been abducted, but nobody had any leads. So as they drove past the mall, Renee suddenly, her hands flew to her throat. She started choking and gasping for air. And this cop had worked with her often enough to realize she was picking up something related to Adam. And he quickly swerved to the side of the road. And he said, "My God, what is it?" And she said Adam was decapitated. And not long after that, his head was found in a canal in Vero Beach, more than 100 miles north of the mall.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So she was very powerful when it came to, you know, being an empath. And so after we met Renee, there was another child who had gone missing, Christy Luna. And that was, I think, in 1986.
In Green Acres, Florida.
Yeah, in Green Acres. And she said, "You guys want to come with me and see how I work?" Because she knew we wanted to write an article for Fate magazine on psychic detectives. So we said, sure. So we all drove up to Green Acres. And it was pouring rain that night. And Renee, you know, we met the policeman. Renee had asked Christy Luna's mother for some of her toys and clothes and stuff, because that she was also really good at psychometry, you know, so she needed to touch things. And she basically described what she felt had happened to Christy was that the boyfriend had abducted her outside the little 7-Eleven where she had gone that day to buy cat food. And then we drove with the cop to the place where Renee felt she was. And it was a field that was fenced. I think it was barbed wire field. And we couldn't get in. And Renee said, "The body's in there. I know it is." Well, the boyfriend was never charged. So, okay, skip ahead to 2009. By then, Renee has died. She's passed on. So that afternoon, we were kind of cleaning up the house because we were going to have some guests who were coming into town. There was a psychic, Denny from
Gooding
from California, who was coming in with Nancy McMonigle, who's now director of the Monroe Institute. And
Joe
my friend
McMonigle's
Carol,
wife, yeah.
Right.
And Joe himself being an extraordinary remote viewer. Go
yes.
ahead.
Yes. And so Scooter had traveled with this Denny Gooding because she had the contact with the cop who said he was, well, wait a minute, I'm getting ahead. Okay, and there was also another woman, Carol Bowman, who's reincarnational researcher and author, and Julie Scully, who was a writer for The Simpsons. So it was an interesting group of people. That afternoon, I open up this drawer in the kitchen. I said, wow, Rob, look at this. Here's a check from Renee, dated 1986 or 7, and it says it was for $50, and it says repayment on loan. And we looked at each other, and we thought, we don't remember loaning her money.
And apparently we never cashed the check
either. Yeah, apparently. And in those days, we really didn't have much money, and we would have cashed that check. So, sure enough, Denny and everybody arrives that night. And I said, Denny, well, how come you're here with Scooter? And she goes, well, Scooter knows the cop who's working on this cold case from Green Acres. And all of a sudden, my heart practically...
And we said to Denny, is it the Christy Luna case? And she looked at us, how did you know?
We said, well, here's Renee's check. And what, 18?
18 years had passed.
More than that, Rob.
Yeah.
It was 2009, so not good math. Let's see, 1986. Well, anyway, a lot of years.
23 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it was like this thing came full circle.
Yeah, that the check appears just when we're having this gathering with two of the people who were there in South Florida, not only to come to our house with this group of people, but also to work with this cop on the Christy Luna case that we had started with Renee.
So we
knew quite a bit about it. And it's still in the news, even recently, they're still bringing up that case in searching for that that body and of the child, and they've never arrested anyone yet.
In fact, what's interesting is Denny also pinpointed that same field.
Right, yeah, the same field.
That's where she felt the body was.
And the field's never actually been researched, investigated.
Which is odd. They haven't, because what they were doing recently was ripping up the side yard of the house where the girl had lived, and they found a bunch of bones there, but they were animal bones, and they didn't say why that particular area was of interest, but that's where they looked, and they had an anthropologist there that was identifying the bones, and
nothing.
Huh? So maybe they should look in the field, but
you think.
It's a big area, and it's a wooded field. But maybe they have looked through there, but if they have, they haven't turned up anything.
Well, that's too bad. But maybe it'll just never be found. But I know of other cases. As I recall, Marla Fries, who is a powerful psychic, who used to do Dreamlands fairly regularly, but she seems to have moved on. Had some extraordinary experiences in doing police work early on in her career. But the police are a difficult issue. And, you know, that the reason being, it gets me to the story of the girl and the flat tire and what happened to her. You can tell
that
us.
That was Renee.
That was Renee. Yeah, that's right.
As a kid.
As a child, right. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Tell us why Renee kind of put off her prophetic or sort of second sight abilities after incident. Tell us about it.
Yeah, what happened was that she had these abilities
as a kid.
And one day she told her teacher that she's going to have a flat tire in her car. And sure enough, 2 days later, the teacher walks out to the school parking lot and the car, and she has a flat tire. So she turns in Renee to the principal, claiming that this little girl stabbed her tire, did something to flatten her tire. And so after that point, they just didn't believe that she could see the future.
Well, she also got suspended from school
for three days.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
As a result of it.
Yeah, so I don't blame her for wanting to hide what she could do.
Yeah, I can understand that. It gets to a larger issue, which is societal,
right?
Cultural resistance and rejection.
Exactly.
I mean, you're listening right now are many close encounter witnesses who are nodding their heads when they hear that word rejection and mm-hmm. the danger that it all of this poses in still to this day in people's lives. Because that is all wrapped up in the fear. And you have a very interesting section part in the book about fear. And not only is it, though, fear of humiliation or actually, in the case of some psychics, have been actually prosecuted for crimes that they didn't commit because the police found out that their evidence was accurate and therefore assumed that they were the only person who could have known and came after them.
Yeah, George Hardy, Rob.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, but there's another level of fear. It's superstitious fear, I would call it. And can you talk about the way fear works as a wall in this whole process of harnessing your psychic powers?
I want to say one thing, and that's that it's really easy to be skeptical. It's not so easy to move beyond skepticism and actually explore the thing that somebody says has happened to them.
Moving beyond the fears. But it's the societal fear of the unknown, basically. And what people who are pursuing these areas is embracing the unknown, which is, to us, much more interesting. And when we first met, this was something we were both fascinated with, the paranormal, UFOs and such. And we didn't know anyone else who had any interest in it. All the people in our lives had no interest in this area, and
or they called it woo-woo stuff.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know.
Yeah, and it turned out that Trish and I had been reading these same books by Jane Roberts, Chandler from the
Seth
books from the '60s, and that was what I had met her through an interview. I was working as a reporter for a daily newspaper, and she was teaching at Florida International University as English as a second language to Cuban refugees, and I was writing about how the refugees 3 years after the Mario boatlift were becoming integrated into South Florida society.
He just wanted to know if they spoke English.
So that was how we met, and it was finding that common interest that we both had that was a key point in our
relationship. And that's basically how we started out as freelance writers, and that's how we met George Hardy.
Yeah, and it, of course, God help you, we became freelance writers.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I was working at a paper, Trish was teaching, and we both didn't like our jobs. We wanted to get out of our jobs, and so we saved $5,000 and quit our jobs and got married and immediately went to Chile and Ecuador on a trip and for our honeymoon. Came back and started basically writing magazine articles, and we were selling them too. But the thing is, the pay was low and the pay was slow.
Right.
And it was a tough way to make a living. But then Trish, when I had met her, had just finished writing her sixth unpublished novel, and she turned it over to me and said, take a look at it, what do you think? And I suggested some ways of editing and changing it and improving it, hopefully. And that was the first novel that sold for her, called In Shadow. And shortly after that, I had gotten a freelance ghostwriting project for writing a nonfiction book for a CEO and lived in Washington, D.C. And so we both had taken that $5,000 had lasted about 4 months, and we were broke, so we both took part-time jobs. And it was about a year after we'd taken the part-time jobs that Trisha's novel sold, and I sold this ghostwriting project, and we both quit our jobs and haven't been back since.
But you wouldn't believe the resistance we got.
Of course.
People, like from family and people who knew us, and, oh, you're crazy. Why don't you just stay in your jobs?
Right. Yeah. I know that.
Yeah, I know you do.
Well, yeah, but I didn't get my wife, when she found out I wanted to be a writer, her reaction was to go back to school and get an English MA in English literature so she could help and edit. And she
– oh, that's nice.
I mean, she did it. Boy, she was totally on my side, and I wouldn't be a writer if it hadn't been for Anne. Now, we're going to take a little break for our free Dreamlanders. Again, when we get back, we're going to be talking about something rather remarkable that happened to Trish a day after the birth of their daughter, Megan. You're not going to believe this is an extraordinary story. We'll be right back.
When Plato's ancestor Solon received the story of Atlantis from this Egyptian priest, the Egyptian priest said to him, "Many and manifold are the destructions of mankind. You have no of but one. But you Greeks are like children. There are many, many destructions of mankind by all various types of means."
That's an excerpt from a show with Rand Flemath, who wrote the original book about crustal shift that is based on the theories of Charles Hapgood. There are three Dreamlands with Rand over the years. That one's from 2015. He goes all the way back to 2004, and they are totally relevant and totally fascinating right now. All you have to do to locate those shows is go to our search engine on unknowncountry.com and input the words Flemath, F-L-E-M-A-T-H, his last name, and all of the shows will pop up. And then if you want to listen to these incredible programs, literally available nowhere else on earth as far as I know, you can subscribe to unknowncountry.com for $4.95 a month or $39.50 a year. And when you do, you get a literal wealth of enjoyment from this website, including the full-length Dreamland every week, every new Dreamland that comes up. So subscribe to unknowncountry.com. Go to the site and click on the subscribe tab. Get started. We're back with Trish and Rob McGregor. Their book, Phenomena, Harnessing Your Psychic Powers, you can get it on Amazon. It's available pretty much everywhere ebooks are sold. Their website is blog.synchrosecrets.com, blog.synchrosecrets.com. You can catch up with all of their work there. Before we left the air, Free Dreamlanders, we were going to ask Trish about Megan. And what happened a couple of days after? Trish, can you pick up that particular thread for us?
Well, there's actually a little forward to that. When I was about 6 months pregnant, I asked for a dream that would explain the past life connection that Megan and I had, because I knew there had to be one. So I dreamed I was in a warehouse all by myself, and suddenly my water broke, and Megan was born. And I picked her up, and she said, "Iceland." I thought, what the hell? Iceland? You know, I've never had any desire to go to Iceland, nothing. Okay, the night after she was born, it was probably about 1 o'clock in the morning. The night nurse had just brought her in for feeding and had taken her back. I lay back down on the pillow, closed my eyes, and suddenly I heard somebody calling my name. Now, I was in a ward with three other women, so I, of course, sat up. I thought somebody was in trouble. But all three women were asleep, and the door was shut. I lay back down, it happened again. And that's when I realized it was an internal voice hearing things. And I also saw, too, I saw Megan, I thought it was Megan, who was about 40 at the time. And she wanted the information about what Rob and I were doing when she was born, where we lived, her birth time and birth information, because she said records where she was had been wiped out. And my sense from this whole thing was that the world in which she lived had been wrecked by climate change. And that's why there were no records, no birth records, nothing like that. Now I'm wondering if really what that was a vision of a granddaughter or a great-granddaughter. I don't know. But years later, when Megan was in college, she got to be friends with a woman who was learning mediumship. So Rob and I went up to Sarasota, and we had a reading with the woman. And I said to her afterwards, I said, "I have one question. And I told her about the Iceland reference. So she went into a really deep trance. She said, what I'm seeing is that you and Rob were siblings, and it was in Northern Europe, a really awful cold winter, like Iceland. And Megan was your aunt, and she took the two of you in after your parents died. And she basically adopted you, fed you, took care of you. And then she said, and this life is her reward. And I thought, uh-oh.
Right.
Interesting twist.
Yeah.
Let me ask you.
I mean, it answered the Iceland question.
Yeah, I can see that. But it's an absolutely fascinating story because it gets us into something that is almost never written about, and when it is, it's just barely touched on, which is the flow of souls between life and what we call death.
Right.
Because there is a definite flow. For example, I already know what my next life is going to be, and where it's going to be, and who I will be with. I'm not going to say, because it's a private business. It's a very private matter. But my point is this. You can know these things. It's possible. And I think with your work, you're kind of circling this thing. And I'm wondering if either of you have ever had any really strong future visions of your own possible future lives.
Okay, this again, Renee was there. We were visiting a psychic who later became one of Rob's co-authors for a book on color divination. And we're sitting around Tony's place, and Renee was there, and she said, hey, let me progress everybody to some undetermined future, and let's see what you pick up. So I thought, okay, and she also had a great voice for hypnosis, for, you know, putting you into a deeper state. And all of a sudden, you know, I lost track of her voice, and I saw myself as a very tall, bald woman living in a dome because of climate change. The exterior air was too poisonous, too toxic to even leave the dome. And at the time, I thought, okay, that's an interesting and scary vision. I don't particularly want to go there. But 2 years later, I ran across Chet Snow's and Helen Wambach's book, Mass Dreams of the Future. And one of the four scenarios.
I think we've talked about that on Dreamland. Yes. It's an incredible book.
It really is. And what she did is she progressed 2,500 Europeans to the 21st century, I think it was, or 2100, I guess the 22nd century. And four possible scenarios for how people were living had emerged, and the dome life was one of them. So that really blew me away. You know, that this thing I had seen while we were kind of just playing around with a progression was actually something that was proven 2 years later in this book.
In what sense proven?
Well, proven that, you know, Helen Wambach's 2,500 progressions had said, okay, there will be people living in caves, there will be people living in a space station or some type of, you know, interstellar thing. There will be people living in domes. And it's because of climate change.
Not really proven your case, your story, but
no, but it backed it up.
That future possibility,
right. Yeah.
Through research.
In other words, for some reason, that was the possibility I tuned in on.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've noticed over the years is lots and lots of dire predictions that don't come true. So much of what Edgar Cayce predicted is the time is now past and it hasn't
right.
happened.
It's
and there's a sense of doom and that's in my experience with the visitors too. They are all very doom oriented and I can't understand this because let me rephrase it. I take it now with a grain of salt. And now, admittedly, my new book, I fought like hell to get it out on the deadline by November 15th, and they have their reasons. They keep saying that it is going to come upon them unaware. In other words, some great change is going to happen here, and they want the book out beforehand because the book is a communications tool, and we don't really have an effective way of communicating with them now. I hope the book helps. I mean, I don't know if it will. I tried my best. But in any case, the thing that—
What's the premise of your book?
No. Let's not get into my book. Okay. We're talking about your book today. We're talking about your book today. That's a kind of an aside. But where I'm leading is, how do we reconcile all of this psychic prophetic gloom and doom with reality? Because it doesn't happen that way.
A lot of psychics I found, and Casey included, their timing is always off. I mean, you know, a psychic will say, okay, in 2 years you're going to meet so-and-so and blah, blah, blah. Well, 2 years pass, 6 years pass, nothing happens. And I think what happens with psychics is that they see what's probable right then. This is the event that is most probable in the future. So I once asked Joe McMoneagle about this, and he said, no, there's no probabilities. He says, what I see is what's going to happen. So I don't know. I mean, it's one of those gray areas. He claims that when he sees an event, when he remote views, that his future self is the one who's relaying the information to him.
Well, you know, Anne thought the master of the key was my future self, and I always think to myself, good. I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah, but I love the key.
But he has a much more moderate vision of the future. It's actually scientifically so far, it's been just dead on accurate. And it's true that there is a time coming that there's going to be a lot of chaos. There's no question really about that. But what you're saying then is that psychics often can't see, they can see events,
timing,
but not timelines.
It's because everybody has free will, I think. You know, you make choices, and based on those choices, maybe one probability opens up and another closes down.
But it's something that's in our consciousness now. That's what's really clear. Where the timing is questionable, but because you look at all the dystopian movies and novels that are coming out, television series, it's something that we talk about. And
yeah,
your book, the
Superstorm.
Superstorm, also goes there.
Yeah, exactly. Of course it does. But here's the other thing, though. If you go like into a happy future, no one's going to read that book. You guys are writers. You know that. And look at a perfect example is Fantasia, the animated classic from Disney from the 40s, 1940s.
Right.
The Night on Bald Mountain section is fascinating. It's scary. It's so cool. But then you get to the Ave Maria and all these sacred beings marching along, and you think, oh, my God, I must not be sentenced to heaven.
Yeah, right.
Because it looks so boring.
Yes. I mean, even when I was a kid, the nuns would talk about how wonderful heaven was and all. And then they had this big thing that you illustrated thing that they stuck up in front of the classroom. Heaven was covered with gold coins and angels and all this junk. But hell was absolutely fascinating.
Yes, it was.
I used to
feel the same thing. The nun was saying, well, now, when you die, and, you know, God's going to meet you, and blah, 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 and I'm sitting there, I'm 12 years old, and going, that's not how it is at all. Now, I don't know why I would think that, except that at some level I knew I was right, that is not how it is, you know?
I don't think it is either.
Yeah, I mean.
Okay, well, we're talking about the world of the dead now, and let's relate that to dreams, because I've been lately having a lot of dreams that are not dreams. They are encounters with other people, and they're in a place where the laws of nature are different. Let me put it that way. And I think it's the other world. I think it's the world I am soon to enter, which is the world we live in when we don't have bodies.
Right.
Does that resonate with either of y'all's experience or knowledge?
Yes.
Well,
Rob, you have plenty of those.
Well, I have dreams connecting with people who have recently died are usually people that I've known. Tricia's mother appeared to me, and what's interesting is the people that appeared to me have been in terrible physical shape before their death, but when they come to me at the point of their death, after their death, they are very happy. They are smiling and waving. And this cousin of mine who had died of a brain cancer, he was in bad shape for months. And my sister had told me that he had just died, and that that night there he was in a dream to me. He came very clearly to me, and he just appeared to me. Actually, she didn't tell me till the next day, so it wasn't like she influenced that dream. It was the next morning that I talked to her, and she had told me that he had died. And but he seemed, was surprising to me. He seemed so healthy, and he says, always said this to me, smiling. He says, "What's happening?" And then he disappeared. And then he disappeared.
Well, you know, Whitley, that your question is really good, because I suddenly thought, wait a minute, I wrote a novel called Esperanza, and 2/3 of it takes place in the afterworld.
I know. That's why I was looking for some wisdom here. But before we tap into that wisdom, though, free dreamlanders, tap into this wisdom.
There are hundreds of charitable organizations in the world. But you have to have a sharp eye to be sure your money is going to where it's needed and not into the pockets of overpaid administrators. That's why Whitley Strieber and UnknownCountry.com support the Mercy Corps. It's non-sectarian, it's lean and efficient, and it goes everywhere on earth that people are in need. When you contribute, you can be sure that most of your dollar goes right to the homeless, the starving, and the desperate. Go to Unknown Country and click on the Mercy Corps Foundation ad on the left side of your homepage. A $10 gift can put food on a child's plate and shoes on his feet. Unknown Country and Whitley Strieber receive no compensation from the Mercy Corps.
The key, the mystery, the wonder. Now in a powerful new edition from Tarcher Penguin, Whitley Strieber updates the thrilling story with new revelations. Even the master of the key's most incredible predictions are coming true. We've discovered that there are many universes besides our own. He predicted this in 1998. He described how intelligent machines could be built. We're doing it now. If you love The Key, you need this new edition. And if you've never read it before, don't miss this beautiful book filled with true wisdom and true revelations. The Key is unique in this world. Graham Hancock says, consider its messages and you'll find it has worked a kind of magic on you. The Key. A selection of the Quality Paperback Book Club, the Book of the Month Club, and the One Spirit Book Club. Available in bookstores everywhere and online in all ebook format.
Recent dramatic weather changes have proved the master of the key is right about climate. Don't miss the key. Get it today. Talking to Trish and Rob McGregor, their new book, Phenomena, Harnessing Your Psychic Powers, you can visit them at blog.synchrosecrets.com. That's blog.synchrosecrets.com. And why should we visit you at blog.synchrosecrets.com? What will we find of interest there?
All kinds of stories about the stuff like we're talking about.
Right. Blogs, in other words.
Yeah.
Or blogs. Yeah. Okay, and it's a cool place to visit. I go there from time to time, and I'm always enjoying myself. You can always also find out about all the other things that Trish and Rob have written, and there is a lot. These are true wise people. They're very sweet and down-to-earth people, but we're talking to wise people here. That is for sure. Nor they don't wear guru hats, but they are definitely very wise.
And Trish also includes monthly astrological readings on the blog, right at the top of it, too. You can just click your
your sun sign.
Your sun sign and see what's up for the month.
Well, for a person like me, as I said before we went on the air, you both announced that Mercury is retrograde, and this is being recorded on November the 4th for, I believe it's going to be aired at the end of November. And I said, in my life, Mercury is always retrograde. So.
I think that's going to become my litany, too.
Right.
Especially for Geminis.
Wait a minute. Especially for Geminis. I'm a Gemini, too. What's going on?
Well, Gemini is ruled by Mercury, and so is Virgo.
So in other words, when Mercury's retrograde, we're being hammered extra hard.
Exactly.
Ah, that would explain it. Okay.
Yes, and you know, things like radios go berserk, and your phone, and your computer.
Oh, that never happens in my life. I mean, my listeners know very well that that does happen in this life a little bit. The time, the last Mercury retrograde, I got my computer blew up. My secondary computer failed, completely ended. I got in the car to take the computers to the computer store to get fixed, and the car went fantastically berserk. I never saw anything like it. The gas gauge was flipping up and down. It's a digital gas gauge. All the lights were flickering on and off. The radio was going, and it was just incredible. And then my first impulse was, it's going to blow all to hell. I'm getting out of here. And then it stopped.
It sounds like it was possessed.
It went, and the battery died completely, and I had to get AAA out to fix the battery, and when the battery was fixed, it was fine. But
that's Mercury retrograde.
That's Mercury retrograde, folks, in the life of a Gemini who's already hopped up electronically somehow or another, as most of us are, I think. In any case, let's get back to the novel and the world of the dead. I have not read your novel, I have to admit. Can you repeat the title and tell us a little bit about it?
It's called Esperanza, which in Spanish and English means hope. And the premise is that a woman who was an FBI agent died when she was shot. And now it's been a while since I wrote this, so let me think here. And another, the man she meets in the afterlife was also shot or killed in some way. Anyway, they both end up in this mountainous town called Esperanza. And there actually is an Esperanza in Ecuador, but not like my Esperanza. And this place, nothing is what it seems.
And you have the hungry ghosts.
Right. And there's a whole conflict between, of course, good and evil going on in this place. And the evil is something I call brujos, witches. But they're not witches. What they are is they're hungry ghosts, like Rob just said. And they're looking to, what they do is they inhabit the bodies of the living and basically take over the human body. So anyway, you've got these two people from the life they were living who are now in this place and don't know how they got there. But they team up, and they end up fighting these hungry ghosts, these brujos. But the whole thing is that even they notice, I mean, they can't remember, first of all, how they got to this place, number one. But also, there's a magic about the place that puzzles both of them, that they can't. It really bewilders them because neither of them are like into magic or even into psychic things. But anyway, 2/3 of the book happens in the afterworld as I envision. And while I was writing this book, I think, wow, where is this coming from? I don't, you know, I'd never tried to write a novel about the afterworld because I didn't think I could do it. And
yeah.
I thought, well, wait a minute. Richard Matheson did it in What Dreams May Come, right?
Yeah, he did. Brilliantly.
Yeah.
He did. And I thought, okay, if he did it, then I'm going to do this. That was my rationale. But I think that, you know, when you're in a creative set of mind, it's easier to tap in to that matrix that we've been talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And tapping in, is critical. And now when you say matrix, in your book, you make reference to Michael Talbot's book, the holographic universe. Can you explain in this context what you mean by matrix?
Well, you knew Talbot. I mean,
I knew him well. He was a good friend.
Yeah, that book was brilliant, and it was something that nobody had really written anything like that up to that point. And what he said was, we all possess the ability to see the future. Okay, that was one of the things he said, because the matrix, I believe that the matrix he was talking about...
We're like in a holographic...
Yeah, we're in a holographic.
It's a hologram,
universe.
Yeah. So
right,
it's all what some physicists refer to as the block universe, basically,
right,
with the difference that in their vision of it, it ends at the present and is expanding. But Michael would say it's only a matter of how you see it.
Well, he also said that the brain is actually a hologram that's enfolded in a holographic universe. And the stories he uses and the science he uses, which, a lot of it, which is quantum physics, really support his premise. So that's what I mean by matrix.
Right.
That, you know, it's...
Well, it's interesting that physics is beginning more and more to see consciousness as something that we are in rather than something that is in us.
Right.
And I address that, of course, in my new book to some extent, and you address it here. And if that's true, then, you know, no one is actually alone inside themselves. This is just an illusion set up by the body. And, you know, you guys go to the edge of that illusory fence. When Charles Fort described this world as a barnyard, he was sort of implying that, you know, we live in an artificial reality, and maybe that's exactly where we are.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, David Bohm had some wonderful... I mean, I'm not into math. I don't understand math, but I love the ideas that David Bohm came up with, which is he felt that everything unfolds from what he called the implicate or the enfolded order, and it's like a deeper stratum of existence, and that what we see in our daily lives is the unfolding. It's the explicate order
from
a deeper place.
And synchronicity, meaningful coincidences, are right at the borderline between the two. And so we have glimpses into this implicate order through synchronicity, where cause and effect are not in play as they are in the everyday world.
And through creativity, Whitley. I mean, you know, I think through when people are deeply creative, they also tap into this deeper order.
Right. And in the next half hour, our final half hour together, we're going to be talking about empowerment. And we briefly touched on meditation earlier, but because that's the part that's for subscribers only, and people who are committed to the website are here for empowerment in large part, in my opinion, because they are all people who have had experiences or are aware that this is real in some way. And they are looking for empowerment, and they're exploring that. So that's what we'll be doing then. But before we go there, I would like to circle back and talk a little bit more about mass dreams of the future. And the reason is that just last week, or week before last, rather, a huge new study showed that the world is going to be much more inundated by ocean sea level rise than anyone had thought previously.
Right, I saw that.
Yeah. Now, this gets directly to the whole mass dreams of the future hypothesis, what they found. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Yeah. Basically, Chet Snow, he actually took up the work after Helen Wambaugh died. And the reason these four scenarios emerged of domes or interstellar living caves, etc., was because the coasts were gone. You know, the oceans had risen. It was just like the day after tomorrow. You know, all of this inundation had happened. And the dome, I guess the dome, it was, at least the dome I saw, was inland. So it wasn't on the coast, but it was inland. And there had been mass migrations from both coasts to where this dome was, and it was inland somewhere, and the entire everything around it was just sand, dirt, and the air was dead. It was toxic.
And also there were people living outside of the domes in caverns or large caves, too, that were, I think what was happening was they were evolving in a different way.
Mm-hmm. It's when I remember the book.
Yeah, it's very, very weird stuff because, you know, it might not be that the sort of science fictional aspects of it are going to happen, but what is apparently going to happen is that this sea level rise is going to be much more dramatic than we thought.
And much more, it's going to happen sooner.
And sooner, and it gets back to the visitors pressing me like hell to get this book out and saying it will come upon them unaware. You know, you have to ask yourself, what are we really looking at here?
Okay, and, where should we move?
Well, I mean, I've told you guys, where you are in Florida, I would seriously think of moving, frankly.
I know. Yeah.
I mean, I'm on the West Coast, it's true, and there are earthquakes here, but I'm also 70 feet above sea level and in a non-fire area. So I'm in a little pocket of safety, he says foolishly. Anyway, free Dreamlanders, it has been an absolute joy having you here, and I'm so glad you come every week. I do hope you decide to bite the bullet and subscribe to the show, because it's going to be it is a lot of fun. And the archive on Unknown Country is just extraordinary. If you're not a newsletter subscriber, it's free. And every week, in addition to keeping you informed about what's going on the site, we give you links to earlier programming. This show's been going on for a long time. There are shows going back to 2004 now on the site, and some of this stuff is absolutely incredible. And we take you and give you access to more of the incredible stuff every single week. So, Phenomena, Harnessing Your Psychic Powers, go on Amazon. How much is it, by the way, guys? Do you know?
I think it's $4.99.
$4.99. So it's not a big price to pay for all of this wonderful information. And you can get it wherever ebooks are sold. And you can harness your psychic powers. You can definitely do it. You get past the fear and the resistance of, I can't do it. I sat down and meditated and nothing happened. I've been meditating for 50 years and a hell of a lot is happening. So get started. And I'll tell you another thing, folks. The more people do this, the easier it becomes. That's why in 2007, 2005, 15% of the people in this country thought there was something to the paranormal. Now it's 75%, because probably more now, because that was in 2017, because we are opening the door. So what took me 50 years might take you 5 months. It's been great having you with us. And their website, don't forget, blog.synchrosecrets.com. Keep up with their website. Keep up with the astrology on the website. You don't have to worry about me. My Mercury is always retrograde, but yours may not be. So thank you very much for being with us. Subscribers, just stay right here because we're not even going to pause.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.